Hello, everybody. Kevin Shortell here. Welcome to the Wednesday webinar. It's April 27, 2016. Thanks for being on the webinar. Thank you, as always, for sending in your content to content@noteschool.com. We do appreciate that. These calls are supported by the questions that you have, so we like to always start with those first. And we can cover on this call, on this webinar, if you will, anything in and around the non-performing note business, really. So please, no question is too simple. No question is too advanced, if you will. We can cover a really broad spectrum on this. So any topics or any things we need to delve into, certainly always nice hearing from people as to what they do. Sometimes I'll create a lesson. Sometimes we'll do a little open Q&A. But always going to be interesting and informative. At least that is my goal in doing these for you. Welcome once again, everybody. For those of you who are new, on the right-hand side of your screen, you should see the GoToWebinar control panel, and that allows you to type in questions if you have any questions. So right in the middle there where it says questions, if you click on that little arrow, if it's not already open, you can type in your questions there. And you can, it shows up on my screen, and then I can answer those questions accordingly. You also, if you have the capability of talking through your computer with a microphone, you can also do that as well. And you do that by raising your hand, and then I can find you on there, and I can get you live on the call there. So got my cam going here. We got the record going here. I also have with me this evening Mr. Kevin Moore. And Kevin comes from the institutional lending background, brings a lot of experience to the table on that side as it relates to our business as well. So I've got him here with me today. And as I always like to do, I like to keep you folks informed with what's going on in the industry. I think it's an important part of being in this business. If you're going to be in this business, know what's going on, what's happening now, what's likely to happen in the future. So before we get to the question tonight that was submitted here, which is a very broad question, by the way, and we can go down a lot of different avenues on that. Before we go into that, I thought we'd have a little discussion here about an article, and I do a lot of reading, as does everybody on the staff here, and Kevin Moore sent this article to me back on April 21st, which I'm assuming was back before we went to San Fran, so I really didn't have a chance to go through it and digest it, which Kevin did. So I think tonight what we're going to do is talk about, again, some market conditions and how that may impact what we do on the note side of the business. So Kevin Moore, let's see. I see you're on there. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing awesome. Yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. Hi, everybody.
Good. So you sent this article in, and tell us what struck you about this article and how it's going to impact real estate and then notes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Kevin. So the reason that this article jumped out to me is that because I'm used to working at the institutional fund level, and you know, as does Colonial, I am always looking at where the forward trends are in all the housing markets, and in particular, what's happening in the space that Colonial Funding and Note School works in, which is the low value band asset base. And so with this particular article, what this does is this speaks directly to where I believe the best opportunities for our students and for Colonial will be over the next 5, 6, 7 years, based on the fact that even though we have some markets that have overheated in the United States already, a la California, Arizona, parts of Florida, we still have pockets across the United States where the market has not recovered. And it probably is not going to recover rapidly. And what I mean by that is it may appreciate at either 1 or 2% a year, or maybe stay flat. And a lot of that has to do with the demographics of the market that we're in. And so with this article, what it does is it gives a very, very good drill down as to which markets and which states just aren't recovering, and it has to do with basically the demographics of the market, and it focuses on the I'm on a mortgage debt on the houses, where the houses are in terms of median value today, the median income of the people that live in the houses, and then how that impacts their debt-to-income ratio, which means, you know, how much money do they have to afford to keep paying the mortgage or refinance or do a loan mod, and then also just how over-leveraged they are. And so again, I'm in Michigan, so I'm near, when I started reading about Michigan, that was near and dear to my heart. But then also what I did is I looked at all the other Midwest markets and then also the Southeast markets.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of we always say in class, a lot of our marketplace is in the Midwest and the Southeast, and it just makes sense because all these demographics fall into place. I mean, that's what creates the better strategies for us being in the smaller price band. And you know, you said a couple of things in here that made me think in terms of this article. This is a new article that will be coming out pretty soon. I think this is an article we're going to have in-house, if you will. I'm sure some real estate clubs will pick it up as well. But it's our response to the article that was in MarketWatch. And one of the things that you touched upon made me think of this article, which I think I just finished yesterday, by the way, but was this whole point of there's a, you know, a lot of industry publications, at least government ones, you know, articles. It's everything's rosy. We're having this big recovery in real estate, and it's not the case. It's very isolated, and they put the statistics the way they want to put it. But Darren Bloomquist, who's the VP at Realty Track, I think he had a good comment in that article, just saying that, you know what, with these banks now go through that bucket system where the notes come down to us. It is a way for them to sweep all that negativity under the rug. It's off the bank's books. It's off the lender's books. So, hey, everything's going great. And the fact of the matter, it's not. There are so many people that are still underwater and over leveraged. And I think that's easily traceable by the fact that why else would they put another $2 billion in the hardest hit funds? Because they know this crisis is far from gone in many areas.
And I agree with you, Kevin, 100%, and you bring up a very, very good point. I was reading an article the other day that illustrated that as well, where the banks are at a point where they're exhausted. The federal government is exhausted with having to keep backstopping the banks. So one of the reasons they've put more money in the hardest hit funds, especially in the critical states, Michigan, you know, Illinois, Indiana, et cetera, is because the banks just want to move on. They don't want to be the guys to foreclose on the assets, so they just soon sell the assets, close their books, and move on, which again is going to create a wonderful window of opportunity for us professional note investors out here, because it's going to go ahead and give us good supply and good opportunity to work assets and make money.
Right. So this article talks about that fact, but this article really is about this study from Wallet Hub. And I had a few minutes to go there, and I'll put both of these for everybody on the webinar. I'll put both of these on the syllabus, if you will, or I'll post them. I'll just post them to everybody so that you can have these links. And let's see, we probably don't need that anymore. So tell us about this study on here, and I know they've got this really cool interactive map, and then they've got, what is it? I don't know how many cities on here where they rate which ones are over leveraged or not. And I don't know if you've manipulated this data in any way or what you deem from it, but tell us a little bit about this one. And if you need me to do anything on the screen, just direct me on that.
Okay, thank you. So basically, what the question they were trying to answer is, are there markets in the United States that are stressed due to the amount of mortgage debt that people have on their properties, and then how much stress also was being put on them because their income levels are flat? And so there's the usual suspects where you look at Michigan and Illinois and Indiana and Ohio, where you go, okay, these are some of the traditional Rust Belt states. They're recovering. They're fairly stable. But they've started to really not increase in value in huge numbers because the majority of people that live in these markets, they can't afford to move either up or sideways, and because their houses are not recovering from the crash of 08-09, the people are kind of stuck. Now, the advantage to us as note investors is that lets us see, kind of in a forward-looking viewpoint, if you want, where best opportunities are going to be for us, because we can tell with a high level of confidence that based on income, based on housing stock, based on where present market value is today, where the best opportunities are going to be. And so, Kevin, for example, you're showing where, you know, Hamtramck, Michigan is rated as the number one city in America, as the most over-leveraged city in terms of, you know, what somebody would owe on their house, what it's worth today, and then what their average income is. And, you know, it's above San Luis Obispo in California, which, you know, the only thing we hear about California is that their appreciation rate has been double digit the past 3 years, and that, you know, it's the best place to invest because of the rapid appreciation. I'm going to tell you that I disagree, because I'm going to tell you that it shows that market is going to pop, because it's an unsustainable level of debt. I would rather be looking in Hamtramck and in Pennsylvania and in the smaller markets, because I know that those are much, much more reliable housing inventories, and I know that the people's income is also much, much more reliable. So I believe that our opportunities are going to be stronger there. I also laugh that there's places like Greenwich, Connecticut, New York City, all these high-value, high-wealth areas where people have the perception that there's no problems in those markets.
Yeah.
And it shows you that, you know what, just like Kevin said, the market isn't recovered. There are small pieces where it's okay, but, I mean, Greenwich, Connecticut is the home of about 80% of all the hedge funds. And the fact that they're within the top, you know, in the top 10 of the list, it's pretty funny. And as you can see, you know, they've got almost $1 million per house, but when you look at their median income, it's only about $52,000. You don't need to be Einstein to figure out that if you make $51,000, you can't afford an $800,000 mortgage.
So part of the information we can also gain from this is insights into that. Should I rent? Should I buy? Decision.
Absolutely.
That a lot of people are in, and I know this is a non-performing note call, but again, that's what opens up those doors of opportunity to the 50-50 model and things like that, because some people just have no choice. When you start to look at what they make and what the home prices are in some of these areas, and the tighter restriction on these lenders, They're going to have to rent at least for a while. And I think I saw an article today in, it was the
DS News.
DS News about the credit reports holding back millennials. Let's see where, if it's here. They do, by the way, everybody, have a housing forecast out there by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and it's rosy. It's all good. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Yeah, it's coming around, but, I'm telling you, what Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, there's a lot of good articles in here, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are now securitizing reperforming loans. Well, when you look at their track record for getting notes reperforming, it's maybe 11% of the overall non-performing portfolio that they have that they get back reperforming. It's anemic. It's pathetic. But now they're securitizing those and selling those on the marketplace as a trickle down. And again, the idea is get them off of their books. It looks better for the overall economic picture. But you dig past the headlines and articles like this, and you can just see that's not where we are. Well, I don't see the other article on credit reports, but I know maybe it was the M report. I know that I've seen something on that where the credit reports are just too challenging today to get these loans. So I think overall on this one, the projection is, as we've been saying, we've got a long way to go. The government knows that, I think. That's why they kicked another $2 billion this way for the hardest hit fund. They've also enacted some of those principal reduction hardest hit funds to help some of this mess that you see here. But pretty cool, pretty nice little interactive map here. If you want to search various cities that you have that you're looking to buy notes on, or you want to look at cities that you already have properties on, this is be a nice little insight, I think, for people to have. So any final comments on this, Kev?
Well, Kevin, to your point about the 50-50 model, one of the other reasons is I found this article to be very interesting is from the what I call the forward-facing news front, which is what we hear on the radio and the TV every day. They keep talking about affordability issues for people wanting to buy houses, and they keep blaming, you know, lack of inventory and things as to one of the reasons why house prices are going up and there's just not enough people to be able to buy. And so this gives you kind of a counterpoint where, you know what, part of the real issue that they don't talk about is that people are still just over-leveraged. And so we want to look at what opportunity do we have as investors to go ahead and grab hold of that opportunity, and number one, profit, and then number two, help people. So again, this is kind of a converse of what we see on the news every day, which I know the news is true, and they give us complete and fair and balanced reporting, but this is a good article. Yeah. When you get a minute, take a read, everybody.
I agree. So, all right. Well, thank you for your input on there. I'm gonna leave your mic open because I'm sure you'll have some comments also on the question that we have. Okay, everybody, let's move on to the question here. And I know that we're going to have a lot of input on this one. I'm certain it's going to be a question that if you haven't already experienced now, you're going to in the very near future, because it has to do with raising capital and using other people's money. So this one came in from Charlie. And Charlie, I'll take a look for you here in just a second. Okay, I see you on there. Let me just frame it up properly, and then we'll head your way. So Charlie gave an hour-long presentation. So number one, I'm going to be curious about that and what PowerPoints you used and how it went. So I almost want to interview you on that, because I know we have some people who would love to do that, but probably aren't quite sure how to go about it. So gave an hour-long presentation to a mastermind group of real estate investors a few weeks back, and now I have about six of them that want to pull their money together to buy a non-performing note and go through the process. So obviously you did a good job. I'll also be interested, just ballpark numbers, how many investors were there, how many became interested. They want me to find, facilitate, purchase, and then guide them through the overall process. They want to use their money, but give me a piece of the deal in return for that guidance. Does this sound like a good idea, or am I better off charging a commission up front? How would our agreement be structured? Possible partnership, better for me to understand asset than sell to them and use all their money from the start, et cetera. Okay, so many different moving parts here. The questions, once again, are simple and short. The answers, however, are not going to be, because this is kind of a big deal on how you structure this. You want to avoid liability, you want to avoid getting into securities issues, and you want to avoid getting into legal issues, all of which these can touch upon. So structuring this is the right way. You were smart to ask this question ahead of time before doing something. I know sometimes we're posed with questions of, okay, here's what I did. Was that right? You know, and we would much rather, in most all cases, get that ahead of time and go, let's talk about it first and then go ahead and do it right. And this is certainly one of those topics. So Charlie, I'm going to unmute you with the thought here that you have the ability to talk with us. Charlie, are you there?
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Great, great. How about yourself, Kevin?
Good, excellent, excellent. So first things before we get into the nitty gritty, you did this presentation. Did you use PowerPoints? How did you do it, first of all?
It was a phone presentation with a mastermind group that I met through other sources that do some real estate investing, and they get together once a week on a common phone call.
Okay.
And they asked me to talk to them about notes on,
okay,
on
so
the
you
call.
Really...
So I didn't have any PowerPoint or anything like that. And to be honest with you, I didn't realize that I was going to be speaking for the entire time. I was the whole show. I didn't know that. So I just kept talking.
Good. All right. So you had to have, obviously you did a good job enough to impact six people to say, okay, not only give me more information, but they want to put some money together and get some things going there. So congratulations on that. But at this point though, you didn't really frame to them how it was going to be done, right?
Well, I've had a couple of conversations with kind of the leader of the pack there since that presentation, and we've kind of gone over how they might see that it could work and how I might see that it could work. But I told them that we would hold off until I spoke with my power team on how we should actually structure it.
Yeah, and it's an important aspect. I say this at the trainings, I think all the time, but it may be new to some other folks. But when you're working with other people and you are a member of Note School, you're bringing a hell of a lot to the table. You've got access to exclusive inventory. You've got experts that can help you. So a power team, in your words, Charlie. You've got the documentation. You've got the know-how, the knowledge behind putting these deals, some specialized knowledge so that you can guide them through the process. So you are bringing a lot to the table that they don't have. What they have is money, and they're lacking some knowledge here. So one of the things that is important on the structuring is this guiding and what role that you play here. So when it comes through this processing, the guiding is okay. I mean, certainly you can act in the form of a consultant, if you would, but you have to have a limit as to what you can talk about and do. In other words, you can't, you can't act in that capacity of a financial advisor. So you can't render specific financial advice. You can't render legal advice. You've got to turn that over to them. So your advice really would have to be limited to the scope of the business and framed in a way where it's like, well, if this were my note, here's what I would do. Or if the questions are, if we buy this note and it goes bad, what can we do? You could lay out a process for them to do that in the capacity of a consultant and to be paid for that. But my opinion on doing something like that would be, I would put something in writing and limit my scope so they know that, and then also make sure I have all kinds of disclosures like the one that we even put on our notes here. Now, Kevin Moore, I know you've got some experience in that field. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you've covered the lion's share of it, but I would say the biggest concern that you have to be aware of is, as Kevin said, number one, make sure you're not creating a unintentional security. Number two, in terms of your entity structure, you want to make it simple. And again, I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving you legal advice or tax advice, but a partnership may be more problematic. An LLC may be a simpler way to do it, where you buy the note and then sell it to their LLC. The rule of thumb is you always want to try to create business-to-business transactions. It's just simpler. And also, you always want to encourage people, check it out with their attorneys and accountants just to make sure that they understand what they're getting into. I mean, this is a good opportunity for you. I know that you can find them a good note, but business-to-business is the best way to go, and keep it as simple as possible with as few moving parts as possible.
Yeah, and commingling with funds, and you got to be very, very careful there. When you touch other people's money right away, there is inherent legal repercussions of that, and it, controlling funds from other people and stuff. It's not an area that you want to get into. And again, the second part here, but give me a piece of the deal in return for the guidance. Again, there's potential for securities on there where you have a gain as a direct result of how this thing performs. So that's where these issues get really sticky when you start to do that together. I would say this. to avoid those bigger issues. Okay, so to avoid these other issues, what you wanted to do is bring the deal to them. So I would turn it back on them. Okay, so here's what I would do. First of all, I would go through. You've already convinced them to a certain part that they understand enough about the business to be willing to put money out there. Great job on that. Fantastic. So you've already done that. The next thing that you want to do then is in the realm of keeping this simple, what I would do is create a questionnaire for them. Now, first of all, before I get into that a little further, do these guys want to come in as one group, or are they coming in as six different individuals? Or is this what they're waiting on you to figure out?
A little of both. I mean, it was suggested that they use one of their LLCs or something, and each of them put, money in, or create some sort of partnership among themselves, or something along those lines. I would think that what I've heard you say before is one note, one owner, type of thing, instead of multiple people. Multiple people can't own one note, right?
Sure. It comes down to structure. So I'm going to erase what I was going to put there. So if I'm understanding you correctly, they already have a structure in place that they have funds in, or they can do that.
They already have all of them are experienced real estate investors, so they all have entities, LLCs and such. They were suggesting that maybe they just form an LLC between themselves, or whether this is just, or they were asking whether this should be a partnership, like a, limited liability,
gotcha,
partnership or something like that.
Okay, I understand now better. So let them figure out the structure, because they could do all of the above. It could be a limited partnership, or it could just be an LLC where there's a controlling manager, something like that. Quite frankly, if I were you, push that to them, let them decide which structure is best, because they can do any and all of the above. That's fine. And
But it would not include me, correct?
Correct.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, you could be a part of that group as well, but that's up to them. And whether you have to kick money in, or you're credited with membership units in the form of an LLC for your contribution, that could be something that you discuss with them. But what I'm thinking perhaps on this first transaction is that you do a very simple transaction where you're going to provide the asset, but you're already going to get, or multiple assets, I'm guessing. How much money are they putting together?
Not sure yet. Nope. They were thinking, $5,000 to $10,000 a piece.
Okay, so enough to buy maybe 2-3 notes, something like that, on the non-performing
maybe
side.
They want to start. Yeah, they want to start with one, and then I advise them to start with one and have enough money to be able to take it all the way through.
Okay.
Instead of having to keep kicking money in, if they all kick money in at the beginning, and have some money held essentially in escrow to be able to handle the workout or the foreclosure or whatever needs to happen.
Okay, so let them pick their structure. If you want to be a part of that structure yourself, you're going to have to get some ownership in it, which, again, you could either pay for, or it will be for services rendered. Your services rendered meaning your specialized knowledge in the deal, and also you have the one that has the access to inventory. But that's up to them to decide. You may want to keep it clean, though. If you wanted to keep this very clean, all you're going to do is find assets that fits what these guys are looking for. And that's really where I was going with the questionnaire kind of idea. What kind of rate of return? What kind of risk tolerance do they have? And I would prefer to have something like that in writing, if you will. And that's why I was going with the, let's get a questionnaire together for them so they can collectively fill that out. That way you can then look through our inventory of assets, or if you're looking outside of Colonial, whatever, look for assets that fit that type of mold, number one, and put them together where you, I'm assuming they want you to do the research on them and everything else. So you're going to be putting together like an investment package that should screen to them at that point in time, this is why you guys want to buy these. Now, what you'll have is the benefit of getting a different price where they might be able to pay par they're on non-performing, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So there could be a markup in the price that they're paying for the asset versus what you have for the asset.
Correct.
Okay. And that way you could make your fee out front. Now, you would need to work with us in the manner that it's funded properly. So that's when you would get in touch with Charles and his department and say, okay, I've got these guys. They've got $80,000 put together, $60,000 put together. They want to buy a note. This is the note I think that fits best for them. And how are we going to fund this? So they'll have to work with you, because these guys, not being a part of Note School, are going to have to wire that money in to be held in escrow. And then we can do a closing from there. And then there'll be a difference between what your price is for the asset and what they what their price is for the asset. So there'll be a couple agreements in place there. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. That would obviously be the simplest thing, but depending on how it plays out, you know, I'm going to be basically telling them what to do for the next 6 months or a year or however long it takes to figure it out, right?
Well, again, that's upon your arrangement there. And you can see what I did was I took out commission, by the way, and put fee, better verbiage in our business. So why not make a fee up front in the difference in prices, okay? And then moving forward, perhaps you put together a a la carte menu of what your services will be, or if you wanted to do that on an hourly basis, or whatever you wanted to do to help them up front, such as setting up a vendor relationship, following up on that, maybe putting out a report or what have you, coordinating the transaction. They essentially want to invest their money, but they don't want to do any of the work. At least that's what their thought process is right now, right?
Well, no, their process is they want to do all of the work. They just want me to kind of guide them through. They want to learn, right? So that, you know, what they're saying is they want to learn. They're willing, and their suggestion is that they all put money in, and I'm an equal partner in that. So I'm 1/6 or 1/7 partner in the deal. They put all the money in. I just kind of guide the thing, and then whenever the comes out at the end, you know, I get 1/7 of it.
Okay. And that's fine. So they're giving you shares for your consulting work.
Essentially, it's the way they had suggested that we do it. I just didn't know what that would be structured like. Is that a partnership, or is that an LLC that I'm part of? Or
yeah, you could do so you could just simply be a member of the LLC. Okay, so when a company is formed or an entity is formed called a limited liability company, the shareholders actually are technically called members, and they own membership units. Same concept, just a different verbiage. So you could simply be a member of that LLC, and you didn't have to pay for your shares with money. Once again, you're being paid for services rendered and future services. No problem with that. So if you're going to go that route, and then it's just that company of which you are a 1/7 partner of, it's that company buying that note and funding that note. That's fine. You won't make an upfront fee, I wouldn't think, on that. but maybe that's what you're looking to do.
Yeah, I'm really just exploring what, you know, different ways it could be set up. I basically, the last conversation I had, I sent them, said, get back with your on your Monday call with your group and decide, A, how much money you guys want to put in, B, what your thoughts are on how it could be structured entity-wise or partnership-wise or whatever, and then I'll get with you guys and see how Note School thinks, you know, would be a reasonable way to set it up, and then we'll get back together next week.
Okay. So I'm going to put a couple outlines here. You are not a part of the LLC and get a spread. That's the other one that we talked about. You can hang in the deal and get paid with them as a member of the LLC moving forward. Let's see, split of profits. Let's see. Those are probably the two, based upon what you've said. You could do a limited partnership is fine as well versus an LLC. That's really, you know, that's just business entity structure. If it's a limited partnership, there's a general partner who's going to make the decisions, and everybody else is limited, obviously, in their scope. So from a buying standpoint, it doesn't matter. Either one of those entities can buy the note. From a management standpoint, LLCs can be managed different than a limited partnership, but they also can be managed the same. So I think that's something the collective group will have to think in terms of what they're more comfortable with. I'm thinking if they've invested together in the past, they probably have a preference of one over the other. That's really up to them and yourself as to which one to choose. Because quite frankly, it wouldn't really affect you that way. You're being given ownership, a percentage of ownership in either one of those, whichever one they form, just based upon, again, your services rather than capital. So I don't see a big difference between either one of those as far as you're concerned.
Well, where do we get into, you know, it shouldn't be a securities violation, really, if I'm part of the partnership, right?
Right. No, you're a part of the entity, and
if
that's
I'm part
fine.
Of the entity, then you know, mm-hmm. I can see where it'd be more of a chance of being a violation if I'm giving advice, but I'm not part of the entity.
Right. You're an outside consultant, and that's why if you go that route, again, I would come up with something very limited on what you can cover, and that's going to be on, you know, giving general advice on the particulars and structuring a deal, but nothing related to, financing, legal, and that sort of stuff. You'd really have to limit your scope. Yeah.
That actually seems more complicated than just forming an entity to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Okay. So I should get with a, figure out whether they like an LLC or a limited partner or whatever, and then get with a lawyer and draw one up.
Yeah, and as a part of that, I think under with six or less, I don't think you're going to have any where it needs to be a private placement of any sort. I think you may be okay, but have that attorney double check that to make sure it's all in compliance. But they'll know how to draw it up the right way, again, you just want to, you know, make sure you have a clear understanding with them that separate the two things. If forming the entity and all that sort of stuff, that's separate from you giving any advice on that, because it can be any of the above. The next part is, okay, now this company that all of you guys are a part of is now going to buy notes. And I would still have something in writing, just in case things go wrong, of what they were looking for. I would probably document my due diligence and helping with that. Again, just in case something does go wrong, you can say, well, look, here's what everybody was looking for. There's what I found. This is what we knew. And this is why we bought that asset. Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
You know, and that way you're always kind of keeping a tally on what you're doing. And, plus, it's not bad to document that just for your own personal purposes, because let's assume that this, on the other hand, goes very well and these guys want to do it again, or now you have multiple groups that want to do this. You kind of have a game plan to follow through and to build upon. So it's not a bad idea to do it in general, but I always think you want to kind of cover your actions and everything when you're working with other folks.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, that sounds good.
Good. Sounds good. Was this a group that you were already familiar with, or just one of the people and they brought you in? How did you meet up with this group?
It was a group that we had met through some other, well, we had met one of the people through other classes, real estate type classes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I obviously spent a lot more time on notes in the last year than I have in real estate, and we went to the class and got to talking about it. Everywhere we go, like, we just went to a Dykes Botterford class 2 weeks ago. I know he's speaking with you guys on hard money lending.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a high level of sophistication, the investors at this class, you know. I mean, these are all people that are doing all kinds of stuff, and they're in pretty high level sophistication. But I was the expert on notes. No one knew anything about notes there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just over that weekend as well, just because I know about notes, I picked up another couple of people that wanna know more about notes and how to do it. So it's pretty interesting that, you know, I'm new at this, but I'm, you know, when I go to these high level things, sophisticated investors, I'm the expert on notes. You know?
Yeah, it is. And ironically enough, of course, private lenders are in the note business. They're just creating notes, but they don't know that there's this whole other multi-billion dollar world out there that they're not participating in. And it's a lateral move from becoming a hard money lender, because I used to do that, to moving into notes that are already created. So it is interesting, and but it's good that you're talking and getting out there and doing that, because you will, by these groups, become labeled by an expert at and that's kind of what's happening to you, because you have that background on there. So, all right, very good. Anything else?
That's got me for now. I think I have other questions on performing note that we've got going, but I'll reserve that for tomorrow.
Okay, great. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ken.
Whoops. Sorry, I didn't mean to unmute you there too quick. You're welcome. Okay, had a lot of people typing in issues, and again, this was not the no end be all, obviously, of this, but I thought it was an interesting conversation. Because there's multiple ways to do these things and how to approach it. Yes, you should get some legal advice. You want to make sure you structure it the right way. You want to have full disclosure. You want to have limit of decisioning power. And you do want to document what it is that you're doing if things were to go wrong. It's just like buying a note. We always hope for best case scenario, but we prepare for worst case scenario. So no problem in forming companies and joining in those sorts of things together. But yes, do it the right way. So a couple of the comments here, and Bill's just kind of echoing that, pooling money, and better check with an attorney. And obviously you want to make sure you're doing it the right way. Let's see. Yeah, Russ was saying, could the entity that owns the notes hire you as an employee to be an asset manager in W-2, you, that sort of thing? And you could. That's another structure way, probably not something that you're looking to do, to be more of the expert. Don't know if you want to be in that realm. But that is another way. For example, management decisions as well. So if you're an outside employee doing certain things, it could be structured that way. When you form an LLC, you have to choose in that LLC, how is that going to be managed? And there's several different ways you can do it. One way, for example, is you can make it a pure democracy. There's seven of you, six investors, and Charles in this example, seven of them as owners of this company. You could structure it on a pure up and down democratic vote, meaning, okay, we're going to buy this note. How many are in? How many are not? Okay, we got four that want to do it, three that don't, so it proceeds. And then, okay, now we want to fix the property up. So every decision that has to be made has to go through a vote. Not a smart way to do it, by the way. Okay, not a smart way to do it, because now you got to get seven people. How do we vote? How do we do this? What if we're, you know, you don't want to do it that way. But I'm giving you an example. You could do it that way. The second one would be, okay, the group decides out of the seven, these two people are going to make the decisions. And as long as them both agree, then we move forward. So they kind of limit that in scope. Or you have another, you elect one person who's ultimately going to make the decisions. And you could have that one person make limited decisions. And that might be on acquiring assets. But their limitation might be it can't be more than a 50% investment to value ratio, or it can't be in certain areas. You could put restrictions on the decision that one person can make. So, or you can even, another way is to hire a third party to make that decision. And the third party could be a separate company. So there's multiple ways in which to decide that. But the thing is, it's got to be decided, and it's got to be in writing, and make sure that everybody's clear on what they can and cannot do from the very beginning. Let's see what else we got. The value of the interest in the entity might be taxable. And again, taxation, that's not something you want to get into with them. Everybody's got to figure out their own taxation as far as federal taxes and how that works. Al's saying, wouldn't it be cleaner to simply play the role of consultant? And again, he could. He could do a consultant and say, I'm not a part of the company. But that's where I said, limit that in scope to make it very clear. You're not rendering specific financial, legal decisions at all. You're simply advising on a deal based upon your experience. I mean, we do that on this webinar. You know, we're not in the business of giving you specific financial advice or legal advice. The best that we can do is say, well, if it were me, I would do this, or here's what I've done in the past that has worked, and explain things through that fashion. And once again, if you document it, if you limit it in scope and you do it, there's no problem with that, but it just structure it the right way. Could it be a joint venture agreement? It could. But again, structuring joint ventures agreement, you still have to think in terms of securities and those potential issues as well. Forming entities sounds too complicated. And it's really not. It's like anything else. If it's new to you, it's complicated. If you've done a bunch of them, it's not complicated. I've done private placements and those sorts of things myself. And it's for me, it's not difficult because I've done them before. I've formed multiple companies. I've had multiple partners and other things. So for me, it's not difficult. And I need very, very little assistance from an attorney on any of it. But again, that's because I've done it. If you're doing this the first time, you don't want to make those mistakes. So absolutely get an attorney, financial advisor, whatever it is, to make sure that it's done the right way and that you are protected to the best of abilities. So it's not as complicated as it seems. It's just new perhaps to you. CPA, sure, somebody's saying talk to a CPA. So again, all of these taxations and everything, going in is the best time to do it. Might cost you a little coin setting up your first ones, but I promise you, as you start to do a little bit more down the road, you're really building a template for the next one. And that would be the same way with Charlie on this one. So if Charlie forms this and he's given membership units because of the services that he is going to provide, he gets paid like everybody else. It's just they brought money, he brought services. No problem with that. And there'll be a payout from that. So he's going to service that along or consult on those things along the way, give his input, make the advice. Decisions will be made by whole parties. If the company, if the entity itself is profitable, then he will get a percentage of that. If it's not profitable, the worst that can happen is the people can lose what their investment is in the transaction. That would be the worst case scenario. But again, some businesses don't do well. So there's you know, it's just as long as we're protected and as long as we did the advice that we were structured to do, not a problem. This is how businesses are done every day. Let's see, clarify the exit strategy. Is it being turned over or held, and how to buy yourself out of the deal if you want to? So Steven's saying this, okay, they formed this company. Charles is a part of it. They find the note. Charles guides them through. This is the best note. Here's why. They say, all right, let's do it. We go for it. They buy it. Now, if it's a non-performing note, let's say they get a deed in lieu and then they fix the property up, because as Charles was saying, they don't want to use all their capital on just buying the note. They want to have funds in there for fixing up and what have you. So maybe what they do is acquire the property. They fix it up and sell it as is. I would establish what the entry strategies and exit strategies are before this company buys a note, obviously, and hence my idea of saying get a questionnaire first to find out what they want to do. If instead of just buying the property through the note and then getting a deed in lieu and fixing it up, do we want to rent it? Do we want to paper our way out of it? Are we going to turn it into a 50-50? You got to have that locked in from the very beginning, because every investor who's kicking money in on this thing wants to know what's our risk and when are we getting our money back. So that should be set up within the elements. If you're going to form an LLC, which I'm sure that's probably the direction it's going to go, within the LLC, you'll have an operating agreement. And that operating agreement should outline what is the purpose of the company, what is it going to do, and what's the plan. Now, if that plan has to change over time because of unforeseen circumstances, unforeseen events, no problem. It's what was the overall intent of it. So my guess in a fund like this, they want to treat this as a real estate play. Why do I say that? They're real estate investors, number one. They've invested before. Chances are they want to come in, acquire the property cheaper through the note, get the property, turn around and sell it as is, or fix around and retail the property out. That would be my guess. If that's not the case, well, let's outline what that is, and then we can move forward from that. All right. Very good discussions on those two topics. What's happening in the industry? What are the changes? I always recommend to you all to stay in touch with that. Glad to do it on the weekly calls, but as always, I'll share what publications we are utilizing to gather all of that information. Anything that you see like that in the industry that you feel might be a good addition to a webinar, you can send that into Content Note School as well, and be glad to cover that information. I've added this syllabus, which I made some notes on, not a whole lot, but I made some notes on. You're welcome to download that at this point in time if you would like to. We've got Summer Summit coming up, so make sure that if you can be there, I highly recommend that you do that. If you haven't joined our Facebook or Twitter account, if you utilize those, I recommend that you do. We're sending out all kinds of content these days. Eddie and I are making anywhere from 1-minute videos to 25-minute videos and putting them out there on social media. So you may want to go ahead and look at those. You've got the like I said, the Summer Summit coming up. We've got some videos on that. And Eddie told me the outline for Summer Summit today. I'm not at liberty to go into everything on that with you, but I can tell you we're going to make some big announcements, some game changers on what's going the note business is going to look like and how we're going to fit into the future. We're going to have some great vendors there that are going to really drill down through live examples of how things are going to work. So we are putting a lot of effort into that. So if you can make that, by all means, make sure that you do. And let's see, Fort Lauderdale this weekend. So I'm sure I shall see some of you in Fort Lauderdale this weekend at a big money class. And I think the calendar is posted for the next couple of weeks, which gets us into, let me see what we got here. After Fort Lauderdale, I know we're going to do something in Denver, which is going to be the week after that one. We've got the of course, Rich Rewards class in Fort Worth, the same time as the Summer Summit. San Francisco, we're going back for a big money class. We're going to Raleigh. We're going to be in Seattle. So if you haven't checked the calendar, you may want to give that a look and see where we're going to be. Always good to come back to the classes. We made a lot of changes in San Francisco this past weekend. I brought some new case studies in. I've revamped some new case studies. We're teaching right from some of the things that are submitted in class. So if it's been a while, and I can't tell you, sometimes it's good to get refreshed and get back into the classrooms once again. Let's see. Yeah, thank you, Lisa. Lisa said and she's been to a lot of them. Lisa Hokinson, she's been to a lot of trainings, and it's always very nice that you have good things to say about it, because I do fear sometimes that some of my more advanced folks might be getting bored, but it hasn't been the case. So she said it was fab, and I do appreciate that, Lisa, as well. Notes documents doesn't have your notes. Did I not save it properly? Thanks. Let me try that again. Someone didn't see the notes there. One of them won't have the notes. The other one will have the notes. This is going to be the one that says syllabus. So I'll drop that back in there and replace it if you didn't have the notes on there. There weren't that many notes this evening. So it'll be the one on the very bottom that's loading up right now for the notes. Thank you, Frederick, for letting me know that. And let's see. Okay, and Bill's saying that the tax lien video on the non-performing note mini lessons area is having some problems. Thank you for that. Anytime you run into that, please let us know. And the best one to send that to would be helpdesk@noteschool.com, because that way Zarina gets it. So Zarina and Matt get those, and both of those would be the ones that have to change that. So it might be a temporary glitch. The other thing, Bill, it might be is make sure that you've updated your movie viewer. Somebody will tell me what that can't think of what that is, but there's a program Adobe has that you have to update from time to time, otherwise the rendering won't work that well. So make sure that you've done that on your end, but we'll take a look on our end as well. Adobe Flash, I knew someone would get it. Thank you, Jason. Adobe Flash, update that to make sure that you have the latest version from Java. It is, you're right on that, and you've sent multiple emails. Okay. All right. I'll look for those emails, Bill. I'm wondering if yours are being diverted someplace, because I don't know that I've seen those. And I'm on the help desk as well. It's not just help, though. Okay. Make sure that you're doing help desk at noteschool.com. And maybe you were just abbreviating it there, but everybody, that's the proper one. So, all right. I'll take a look. Bill, I'll actually copy what you wrote right there, and I'll send that to Zarina myself. All right. Thanks, everybody. Y'all have a great evening. Good talking to you as always. Kevin Moore, thanks for being on with me tonight as well.
You are welcome. Thanks, Kevin. I enjoyed it.
Okay, bud. Bye now.